When introducing a new initiative in a school setting, it's always an advantage to have buy-in from a number of colleagues right from the start. You could claim there is safety in numbers, be encouraged that we're all in this together, or rely on the fact that a crowd draws a crowd. However, it's not always the case. So when you're the only advocate for starting a coaching culture in your school, what do? You start with one. Hello and welcome to the Coaching in Education podcast series. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Ellie Smith. Ellie is a senior learning coach at St Andrew's Cathedral School in Sydney, Australia, and has a fascinating story to share about how coaching has been established, grown, and flourished over the last 7 years. Ellie, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thanks, Richard. I'm really looking forward to sharing some of our story.
Ellie, to give us a bit of context, can you share with the listeners maybe how you got into coaching in the first place, and also what or who inspired you to introduce coaching at St Andrew's Cathedral School?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. What's really interesting is that how I got into coaching was not necessarily something I chose or I was sort of interested in and pursued it. At the time, I was just simply looking for some work in a school. Okay. Ironically, it was at a time where it was really hard to get a teaching job. It's hard to believe that now in Australia we sort of have a teacher shortage. But I actually was appointed at St Andrew's Cathedral School in a role as the learning coach of technology. And at the time I sort of, you know, I was trained as a PDHBE teacher, but had been doing some consulting for some teacher training companies around integrating technology into the classroom, and had sort of been working in the professional development space for teachers for a little bit. So it seemed natural to sort of, if I couldn't get a full classroom teaching position, to head down into that professional learning space, to which I landed in this role of a learning coach of technology, which essentially I think was what we consider an IT integrator position.
Okay.
At the time, like, I remember the job description didn't necessarily have anything in there about using coaching or developing coaching models or anything. It was very much just about technology integration. But what I had to do as basically, I might have been like the first week of employment, was the Growth Coaching International Introduction to Leadership course. We actually had it run internally at the school, and the deputy at the time, he was obviously, you know, investing a lot of money and time into using coaching in the school. He'd obviously seen that it had worked at other schools in New South Wales and wanted to introduce it at SACS. And so I did the course, sort of going, yes, good employee, of course I'll do the course, you know, anything to help me in this role, having no idea what it was. I did have a friend of mine who had done some coaching. She was living in the UK, so I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't really, you know, a sports background, coaching, like growth coaching. I think that's sort of how I got started in a strange way. I didn't necessarily seek it out. I sort of was like, you need to do this, part of your job. Okay. And then from there, I think it really flourished because I had this, I was in a role where it was very much one-to-one or working with faculties to try and integrate things. And it was a great way to ensure teachers were reflecting on why they wanted to use certain technology rather than going, oh, I saw this bright, shiny bell and whistle and I want to use this in my classroom. So, from the start, I kind of had to think about a coaching way of being and trying to get people to reflect. I had no models, I had no frameworks within the school. It was just like, you've done a coaching course, this is your job. Just kind of use them together. So, there was no formal strategy or support. So I just found that it was such a useful tool to use that Growth Coaching International sort of coaching framework. to frame the conversations I was having with staff. And as a new staff member at the school, it was a really good way for me to build relational capacity across the school. I was working in K-12. You know, everybody needed me because everyone needed to know how to use the technology that had just been introduced. So it was kind of this combination of they needed me, I needed to have the conversations with them. So I had to kind of weave a coaching approach through there. So I guess I really kind of learned the hard way because it wasn't formalized coaching. It was sort of, you know, how might you introduce coaching without coaching?
It sounds fascinating. And I think, you know, for our listeners, I mean, wouldn't it be great if all the heads listening thought, that's a fantastic part of induction. Every new teacher within 1 week of starting the job should be going through a coach training course. But it obviously sounded like, you know, it very much evolved, and lovely for you to have that opportunity just to try things out. And you mentioned, you know, at the very, very start of that particular role, conversation was very important and you were having conversations with a lot of people. So I suppose it fits really well. And looking back on it, it's interesting to see how that all panned out. Ellie, earlier this year, you did an excellent interview with Jason Pascoe at the GCI Online Coaching Conference. That session was called Start With One, which really caught my attention because there are so many educators out there who have invested, you know, time and money in coach training. But because they're going back into school as the only one sometimes flying the flag for coaching, it can be a huge uphill struggle to start gaining some traction. What did you find was the biggest hurdle right at the start of your coaching journey at St Andrews?
I think I thought about this one long and hard because there were so many hurdles. And some days I would, you know, describe it as like, you know, banging your head against a brick wall, or, you know, pushing a dead cow uphill backwards. Like, it was just so hard. In looking at it, I think the one of the biggest hurdles and the challenges, and it's still a challenge today, was, you know, how do you measure the impact of what you're doing? And because when I first started, obviously I was doing the technology role, and then, you know, we sort of evolved that into the senior learning coach role. But when that role changed, coaching wasn't in the strategic plan yet. And so the school was very much in a process of shifting into measuring impact, as are many schools in the Australian education context, and I'm sure globally, looking at, you know, data and evidence-informed teaching and learning. And so I couldn't just say it works, or, you know, coaching is the answer and we just have to do it. That was never going to get through. You know, and you couldn't just capture a whole heap of, you know, feedback from staff or staff voice or student voice. I had to have some level of analytical analysis of, you know, the impact that this was having. You know, at the time we had some school goals and some goals for teaching and learning, and, you know, that really, you know, it was hard for me because I was sort of trying to work this out, and I had a little bit of experience with data analytics and some research, but I spent a lot of time in that space understanding, well, if I'm going to measure something, how do I have to display it? How do I have to visually represent this? We've got a head of data analytics at our school, and I spent a lot of time with him looking at all the different data sets that I collected and which ones could I actually use, which ones could be presented. So it was, a steep learning curve for me initially to understand the different types of data that I could collect, what was valuable, what I could present visually, because I think when you're presenting, you know, to exec of why should we do this, you can't just sit there and tell a story. You have to visually portray the story as well, you know, in the forms of graphs and charts and those sorts of things. That was part of that hard bit, you know, measuring, but also understanding how to display the measurements. And I think on top of that, something else that was a little bit of a challenge as well was to build that relational culture. So I'd come off the back of a couple of years of being that IT integrator, and I was known across the school as someone who, you know, was helpful, someone who serves, but I had to kind of build on that, you know, and it sort of had to flip from I was needing their help to kind of go, hey, can you help me get this off the ground? So I had to really present a sound knowledge and understanding of coaching and make sure that I was really good at coaching because, you know, they knew I could do the tech stuff. But, so I sort of went about another professional growth aspect and did some more training with Growth Coaching International. So did the solutions focus course, which was just amazing after kind of having a few years of using the growth framework, being able to have a couple of extra tools in the toolkit was good. And then also I completed the CAP4 accreditation, which was really an opportunity for me to step up and look at some education and research in around coaching and how that could influence my practice and be a lot more reflective. And those two things, like thinking about how you measure and being the best coach you can be within your context, really I felt like was something that helped me get over those hurdles in those early days.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, you talk about that idea of building this thing as you go. It almost reminds me of the Apple advert, you know, building the plane as you fly it, you know, because you're very much sort of picking up things as you go along. And you mentioned in there, you know, measuring impact is obviously hugely important. And you're right, it just can't be a nice story about how everything's going so well. You know, you need to be able to convince people of the actual impact. I love the phrase, Ellie, and I think this is what, you know, listeners, this will really resonate with those folks who are out there right now, maybe just at the very start of this, pushing a dead cow up a hill. I've got a lovely image in my head, which I'll probably never lose. But I think it's terrific to be able to show other people out there that at some point at the very start, that is what it's like. And not to give up, which will be so beneficial for folks who are listening to this. Ellie, in your interview with Jason, you mentioned carrying out an environmental scan back in 2016 to try to assess the impact coaching might have at St Andrews and to give you some idea of maybe where to make a starting point. You talked about, and love this phrase, testing the growth coaching approach in every corner of the school. Tell us a bit more about that process.
Yeah, so I think this idea of testing coaching and how it works really comes back to the concept of the fact that schools are complex and adaptive systems, meaning that they're regularly changing. There's a lot of internal and external factors that impact the success of the school. And so for schools to develop a strategy, you sort of have to consider the interlocking issues and fads and educational trends at the time. And then sort of to work out, well, where are the indicators for change or areas for change within your school or perhaps within the broader educational context? And so that's sort of where, you know, why we need to do this. And when we're doing coaching, and often I, you know, talk to other schools who are considering coaching, and I sort of said, you know, sometimes we jump in and we go, I want to start with students or I want to start with teachers. And start with working out where you're going to have success. And so this, the concept of the environmental scan, I mean, there's heaps of ways that you can do these. Most people have probably heard of quite a simple one, like a SWOT analysis. So strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats, or, you know, a more detailed one would be the PESL, which is probably something that you would look at a lot higher. So there's something we looked at when we were doing our strategic planning, so looking at political, economical, social, technological and legal and environmental aspects. So that PESL model is quite broad. We didn't necessarily use a model to do that environmental scan, but essentially what I did was just kind of dabble in all of the different areas in the school. So I knew what the school was doing in different places. I knew we were trying to change the way we were sort of doing some parent-teacher interviews at the time. We had a couple of things going on in the teaching space. So we were looking at the universal design for learning. We were also introducing our new teaching and learning model. We'd also just introduced some growth learning plans for our senior students. So there were lots of things happening in the school. And so I sort of personally, and with a couple of people, I tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, could you just try this stuff here, see if it works? And so I sort of gave them, like, you know, in parent-teacher interview, we had I just sort of gave them like a framework conversation that they could use that had a coaching approach. We worked with a tutor group around their growth learning plans and using a coaching approach to that. I ran some workshops with 10 teachers around the universal design for learning, and then tack on the back of that one-to-one coaching of how you would implement it. And we did the same thing with our teaching and learning model. So we'd sort of, and then obviously I was having these random coaching conversations around the school where people had sort of said, I want to be coached. And so I collected all of that information and sort of did, I guess it's probably a bit of a SWOT on all of those things to sort of go, look, I tried all this stuff. Here's where I think we're going to have the most impact, thinking about where the school's heading and what the school's vision is. And so that's where we sort of went, look, teacher practice, teacher expertise is where it's going to work best. And obviously at that point we'd looked at two different things with the UDL and the teaching and learning model. From there we sort of went a bit deeper and we used a process of interviews and observations of, you know, people and processes that we had to collate and analyze the data around how we were providing staff with professional development for our teaching and learning model. When people were accessing coaching for that, what was good about it, what needed to change, all these sorts of things. Very much a growth mindset, like if this is going to be the best it can be, what do we need to consider? So that solutions focused coaching approach. No limitations, and that's how we kind of started our first sort of one-to-one coaching program, which was around implementing the teaching and learning model.
I think the interesting thing listening to you, Ellie, is that, you know, it's going to be slightly different from one school to the next because, as you say, every school has so many different things going on. So, and I'd actually written down here growth mindset because I'd written down, you mentioned, you know, this idea of taking risks, so trying different things out, and at the same time, you know, being open-minded. So there'll be some aspects that maybe won't work immediately, other aspects they will. And you'd mentioned the idea of start where you think there's going to have the most impact, and you used a word here which I've written down, dabble, which I love that word, you know. And again, that's about being open-minded about where you start your whole coaching process. And even there, you know, the idea of parent teacher interviews, you know, giving teachers a model or a framework to use in a very, very practical, real way, which I think is just terrific. And in 2019, you reached the point where coaching had gained enough traction to be included in the school's strategic development plan. Can you share with us, Ellie, the importance of having coaching on the agenda at that strategic level?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier about the importance of building a relational culture if you're going to try and embed coaching within the school. And it's probably important at this point to recognise that coaching actually came up through the strategic themes during the strategy development process. So it wasn't like we just sort of said someone, you know, pushed a button and said coaching is going to be in the strategic plan. It had to come up from the bottom and through the conversations and the planning meetings that we were having. So I think that a lot of the groundwork that we did early on in building relations and spreading the word of coaching enabled coaching to come up as a theme through those initial strategy building processes. And I think how did that happen? Like, how did we get the word out about coaching? And it comes back to what I said before about the measurement. In the very early days, much to my frustration, and now I understand why I had to do it, I would present to our senior exec biannually with a coaching report and recommendations, including budgetary considerations, you know, for the following year and, you know, staffing options, project options, these sorts of things. So those environmental scans that I was talking to you about just before, we were constantly doing those because we had to keep reporting back every 6 months. So because we were doing that, we were talking about coaching, we were showing the impact, we were sort of forward planning into where else we could do this. At that point, we didn't have a strat plan. So it was really about increasing the exposure of what coaching's doing to that senior exec, but also sharing that with wider school where we could and where it was appropriate as well. And that really helped put coaching and its impact on the table. you know, I always made sure that we didn't just have the head of school and the deputy principals. You know, we had head of finance and head of strategy, director of strategy in there as well, director of people and culture. Like all of those people were in there so that they could get a broader understanding of it. And so I think once it was in the documentation, that was a really big moment for us. I remember taking a photo of the strat plan when the booklet came out, and I sent a message to Jason Pascoe, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like it's starting now. You know, we start now. Like don't worry about the, you know, 5-6 years beforehand. Like this is our starting point. And I guess what I really meant by that was that it was in writing and it was formalized that, you know, this was going to be St. Andrew's Cathedral School's way of attracting new staff to the school and to develop our existing staff. It really meant that we had a way now of ensuring that everything we do for coaching, there's a process, there's a system, we can report into it. You know, we were able to set strategic initiatives and measures and milestones along the way and report into them, which then gave us leverage to put forward new strategic initiatives, which obviously then gets the funding for. So, you know, I like to think that we developed quite a good strategic process at our school. And so because coaching now sits in that plan, we know that there is a process and there's a way that we can sustain this. And, you know, even it's not solely, you know, reliant on me being as that person. You know, if someone else comes in, it's in the plan. So it's like, well, no, we're thinking about this long term. So having those supports and processes in place because it is in the strategic plan means that the decisions that we make about coaching are evidence-informed, they've been strategically developed, and they're sustainable financially. And then, you know, hopefully over time what we start seeing is that coaching sort of becomes BAU, like business as usual, because, you know, everything we've done, we've kind of embedded it into our practice and we're doing it in a strategic way. It's not just a once-off, oh, we need to, you know, splash cash in this space. It's like, no, we've strategically thought about this so that we can sustain it over time.
I think that's really helpful, Ali. I think the fact that you mentioned it doesn't just arrive on the table, you know, out of the blue. You know, it's not something just arrives on the strategic plan. And I suppose looking back on it now, you can see right from probably that first GCI course you went on, the seeds were starting to be planted at the very start, you know, and starting to grow. And I suppose as those conversations increased that you had with other members of staff, that over, you know, a couple of years with all of those environmental scans that you were doing again and again and again, it really was becoming part of the strategic plan, I suppose, without people even realizing it. Whenever, and I'm sure, yes, it was a lovely moment to see it in black and white on the actual strategic plan. And that gave it, I suppose, a lot more value and a lot more weight moving forward, and makes it a lot more sustainable in many ways. Ali, as coaching then started to really gain momentum at St. Andrews, in what ways was it having a significant impact on school life?
In all honesty, I think it's really helped shift a culture around teacher professional development. And, you know, even though in New South Wales we have, you know, quite high expectations for the amount of hours that we have to do for professional development, but I think really it's, when I say culture, I mean we accept it. We go, yes, I want to invest in this time. I want to reflect on this. I'm not just going to go and sit down for a full day and watch a professional development or have someone talk at me. It's like, no, this is my genuine professional growth. And what's really interesting, and this year we've really noticed it through one of the environmental scans we've done this semester, is that when we first started coaching, teachers didn't want others to know that they were being coached. And we really didn't have a shared understanding of what the role of coaching was across the school. And that was basically because we kind of, you know, go back to we're dabbling in different areas and we weren't necessarily kind of going, this is coaching, this is what we do, because we were trying to work out where it worked. So we kind of, you know, like a, sort of just rose up, you know, from the bottom. So it was understandable that we had this misunderstanding of the role of coaching, who accesses it. And over time, that's definitely changed. We've created a lot of documentation and policy around what coaching is. We've done a lot of professional development and, you know, promoting awareness of what we do, getting a lot of staff voice input into creating like videos and articles around the impact of coaching. So we've done a lot in that space to change the culture, which, as I said, has really helped shift that idea of what is teacher, like quality teacher professional development. And I think really some of the work that our director of teaching, Dr. Kirsten McCauley, has done around embedding goal setting and our appraisal documentation into our professional growth, which is, you know, when we pair that with coaching, there's a real sort of buzz around teachers working together to achieve professional goals and improve their professional practice. So that's a funny thing because often people sort of say, you know, we don't use appraisal and coaching. And I'm a strong in strong agreement of that. You know, it's a really fuzzy grey area to get into. Mm-hmm. But I think in developing our goal setting process and our appraisal process within our school for our teachers and leaders, that's encouraged teachers to make that shift and seek professional development through coaching to achieve the goals that they're setting. So it's not that we're saying we use coaching for appraisal. It's no, we have an appraisal process to give our teachers the supports and the structures to improve professionally. And we also have a suite of professional development options, which includes coaching, which you can access. So I think the biggest change that we've seen in a group of teachers is among our new staff. And I think that's because we created a new staff coaching program. So all of our new staff, when they come in, they do a semester of the new staff coach mentor program. And we know this has worked because our data from our learning walk show that over time, since the introduction of this new staff program, these teachers are displaying higher levels of teacher expertise and integration of our teaching and learning model than when we sort of started the new staff program. So we're seeing, I guess, shorter time that it takes for teachers to implement our school's teaching and learning model as a result. So we're seeing, because of coaching, teachers are going, oh, I need to adjust my teaching. I need to consider the teaching and learning model. I need to seek professional development around this so that I understand it and then go and implement it. And we're actually seeing it in the classroom a lot earlier than what we were before we started this new staff program. So as I said, it's the cultural shift. I mean, I wouldn't say like not everyone at the school accesses coaching because it's totally voluntarily, but you know, it's those who do, this is what we see. You know, and across K-12, we have, you know, over 65 teachers accessing coaching, you know, sort of throughout the year. Wow. So we're probably looking at, you know, over 25, sometimes, you know, 30% of our staff, teaching staff, and that's voluntarily accessing it. Yeah. So, you know, we haven't got to the point yet where we're saying everybody has to do coaching. So, you know, I think that that's probably one of our successes as well, because it's like we're not mandating it and we still have a high percentage of our staff accessing it.
Yeah, yeah, the numbers speak for themselves, very, very much so. Ellie, at St Andrews, as you stepped into 2020 with great plans, I'm sure, to continue to develop this coaching culture, there was a period of change that no one could have predicted, and that was the COVID pandemic. Can you share with us some of the challenges that posed for coaching at St Andrews and how you managed to address those?
It's so funny because, you know, when I tell you how I took the photo of the strategic plan and said, this is the start, I feel like I jinxed myself because then 2020 happened. But, look, I think really for us, one of the challenges we found, we come together fortnightly as a team of learning coaches across K-12, and one of the things that we talked about that was highlighted that was missing in our days when we were online learning was that teachers, those water cooler conversations, or at our school we call them traffic light or elevator conversations, they were missing. And at St Andrews Cathedral School, you know, those conversations are often our opportunities where we share our coaching stories or we reflect on the lessons. Like we've just come out of a classroom and we see someone at the lift and we start having a chat. Oh, I did this and then this happened and then this didn't really work. And that disappeared with remote learning because you were sitting at home and you had, if you were lucky, your people at home might want to listen to your story about your class, but that incidental reflective practice was missing. So whilst we were still having conversations with staff, and one of the challenges that we found was that the conversations weren't necessarily our pure one-to-one coaching anymore. They sort of shift to online learning support, which was sort of a shift from coaching to mentoring and almost pure instruction. And for me personally, as a leader in the coaching space, and I was responsible for strategic initiatives at the time, it was really hard because I couldn't report into them because it just wasn't the time or place. We were supposed to be trying to do a video enhanced observation as an initiative, and how could you do that in an online context when teachers were already pressed trying to work out how to do that? So basically what we did was we sort of went back to basics and collected baseline data, such as how many staff were having conversations with this still, how many hours were we coaching for or having these online conversations, was it remote learning support or pure coaching, how many sessions were missed by people who normally access coaching, and then that really helped us develop a solution and find solutions to manage this challenge of not having those face-to-face opportunities or incidental opportunities. And we sought to find a way to bring people back together, and we developed a concept called our coaching triads, which is essentially one coach, two teachers around a central theme, which was aligned to our teaching and learning model, so instruction, practice, or feedback. And we used educational literature as the sort of the center and the core to develop some new teaching pedagogy. And at that time, obviously, the pedagogy was very much focused around online learning. But what we never thought that this would actually become, the highlight of the week for our teachers, and all the feedback was that they were like, this is the one thing I actually looked forward to. Some groups met more than once a week. A lot of the feedback was that teachers felt that they were finally having conversations with purpose, and it made them feel like they were teaching again, because not just surviving and drowning in this online world. And one staff member even commented that it was so refreshing not to have conversations about, the number of COVID cases or how many times you've built the block, or that we were actually having conversations about learning. So it was so good to see that. And I think the best thing is that has become a staple in our coaching program post-COVID lockdown, all that sort of stuff. And really now it's a way that we bring new staff into coaching. So people who haven't accessed coaching before see it as a bit of a more informal way to sort of dip their toe into the water and test it and see if they like it before moving into a one-to-one coaching session. So, what was seen as a real challenge in that we didn't have those opportunities to do quick reflections and talk about teaching has really transformed into something that is just a staple that we do all year long now.
Fantastic. And it's fascinating looking back over that period, because I'm sure it was different at the time as you lived through it, but looking back over that, how you've managed to turn a very negative, challenging situation into something very positive, because not only has it been an opportunity to develop new ideas at the time, those ideas are still standing true. I mean, you used a lovely phrase there, through COVID and working from home, you lost the opportunities for incidental reflective practice. And that is true. The opportunities weren't there because, as you say, you were at home. But then this idea of the coaching triads came around. And again, I love that phrase, people started having conversations with purpose. I mean, that in essence is coaching, conversations with purpose, which is just terrific. And it goes back to an earlier part of the question you were answering. You talked about teacher professional development. This is my professional growth. So, having teachers with a desire to have conversations with purpose is just fantastic. Finally, Ellie, for those listeners who are in a similar position to to where you were back in 2015, what would your advice be to them as they start with one and find themselves flying the coaching flag on their own? What would the best first steps be?
This is interesting. I think when people ask me this, every time I answer it differently because I think of something different. So I had to think really long and hard about this one. And I think at the end of the day, it's to know and to serve your people. So when you do this, you can really understand where the urgency is within your school or your organization, and you have a really good understanding of where coaching can operate. If you look at the literature around sort of change management, Cotter has an 8-step change model that looks at the theory for educational leadership change management and sort of unpacks this idea of creating a sense of urgency for successful change management. And so if you can know your people well and serve your people, you then find where the urgencies exist within your school, and you can then align them to coaching, and that's a really good place to start. So, yeah, like your vision has to come from your people and the school's plan or direction. And to do that, you have to have a really good understanding of what coaching is as well, and how to coach in various contexts and coaching literature. Mm-hmm. So you got to get out there and coach.
Yeah.
You would read, talk to other coaches, develop a coaching way of being. Just coach, like spend hours coaching before you start thinking about being visionary and stepping up. If I think I sort of had nearly 3 years of just coaching in a bucket load of context and sought different, you know, I through my CAP 4 accreditation with GCI, I realized that I hadn't really coached anyone outside of the teaching, learning, leadership or teacher or student space. And so then I sought to do some sort of executive coaching within and externally, within our organization and externally. And for me, that really opened up another, a whole nother range of skills, because I was so used to just following a process of, you know, what happened in your class today? You know, like what does your student data say? So you get stuck in that rut. But you know, because I was able to do that, when I was building relationships and I was trying to build that coaching up, I'd sort of put a coaching way of being across so many different areas of the school, because I'd coached in so many different places. And then as I had some staff underneath me, I trained them to coach well. I trained them to practice coaching, to reflect on their practice, to read about coaching, to listen to podcasts. And we still do this. Because at the end of the day, if you want it to work, like your coach, they have to be the best. We pride ourselves on that at St. Andrew's Cathedral School. It's really about how can we have the best coaches, because if this is in our strat plan and this is the way we do things, we need to make sure that our resources are serving our people well. And part of that is about developing our coaches so that they can develop our teachers. So, yeah, so there's two things, you know, serve and know your people first, but then also at the same time, just spend time becoming a great coach. You know, we talk about in education, spend time being a teacher before you sort of step into leadership, you know, really understand what it means to be a great teacher, understand how the classroom works before you jump up to leadership. Same thing with coaching. Understand how coaching works across different contexts, the different natures of coaching conversations, how to have a coaching way of being. In my staff, I've seen it takes about 2.5 to 3 years for them to start showing a coaching way of being, because they have so much confidence in their coaching skills that it just comes out naturally in those elevated conversations, in meetings, in conversations with students, parents, family, friends. And I've seen my guys do about anywhere between 50 to 100 hours of coaching a year.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it's like lots of coaching, you know, we'll definitely get it off the ground.
Fantastic. Ellie, super advice to know and to serve your people well and coach, coach, and keep on coaching. Ellie, thank you for sharing the ups and downs of the early stages of developing coaching at St Andrew's Cathedral School, and for inspiring our listeners to really persevere during those initial weeks and months, and maybe even the first few years of introducing coaching in their context. For our listeners, this is only the first half of the coaching journey at St Andrew's, as we will be having a second episode, which we will look at the challenge of moving from starting with one learning coach to a whole team of learning coaches and what's involved in sustaining and growing that. I trust you will all be able to join me in that next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.